Welcome to the Grand Theft World podcast, sponsored by GrandTheftWorld.com. This is where we take a sampling of this past week's current events and we smash them into contextual history so you can better understand what's going on, so you can make better decisions in your life. What we have here on GrandTheftWorld.com is a long list of independent media producers who love liberty and freedom and who call out the censorship we're going to be talking about tonight, all these things that are being taken off of your platter of consideration so that you can have a finite limited choice, which is not freedom. So as we learn to recognize the people purveying truth and funnel them through to GrandTheftWorld.com, it's a single stop shop where you can go through chronologically current events posted by various media producers. I think we have 40 or 50 listed on the site right now. There's also a thriving community there of people behind the scenes. We provide a bunch of extras aside from just the content on the page to make it insightful, to give you guys community features so you can share resources and research and evidence and these sort of things pertaining to this. Also, there are extensive notes for each and every episode of this podcast found on GrandTheftWorld.com. There's a hamburger menu at the top. If you're on a mobile phone or something like that, click that open. You can see the podcast. You can see the long list of producers that we feature here whose work we admire. And we want to be able to have one place where we don't have to go the far outreaches of the internet, far outposts because of the censorship, and we can find them all in one place. Also tonight, we're streaming on YouTube, we're streaming on Float, we're streaming for the first time on Rockfin, and this show is probably going to be not there in the morning on YouTube because most of the clips we have featuring tonight were censored in 2019, 2020, so I think they're going to be censored probably this year too. We'll see how long it takes them to catch on. It's always fun playing catch up with the YouTube algorithm, but at least you've got the headquarters of GrandTheftWorld.com, and you've got our outposts on Library and these various other internet purveyors of independent media and freedom talk. Those are found in the list in the details on the episode at GrandTheftWorld.com, as well as the YouTube list details for this episode while it's there. Tonight, we have a very exciting lineup of both contextual history to help you understand the current events. We're going to kick it off with a clip from Tim Pool. He's talking about something called the Great Reset. You might have heard about this. You might have heard that some establishment outlets have called this a conspiracy theory. Let's see what news Tim has brought to our desks this evening.
And when you, I get a lot of questions specifically with people asking me, when will the Great Reset happen? I'm like, it's here.
It's here.
It's happening right now in front of our very eyes, and no one's even paying attention and realizing that it's the largest transfer of wealth is happening right in front of their eyes. John Kerry came out. He has a big position inside of the Biden administration. He came out and said, of course, the Biden administration is going to go along with the Great Reset. We're going to implement it quicker and faster than anyone could even imagine. But
yes,
people forget we're here. We're at this juncture right now.
The Great Reset people, this is, you know, Klaus Schwab and the whole Davos crowd, the World Economic Forum. One of their key catchphrases they've been marketing for years is build back better. Build back better.
Yep.
Build back
all
better.
All across Europe.
And they had it recently. We saw Trudeau out of Canada and Boris Johnson and we got Biden talking about it. But the funny thing is, if you go to the Biden-Harris transition website, it doesn't say BidenHarrisTransition.gov. Their website is literally buildbackbetter.gov. That is their transition.
The talking points.
Website.
That's what these European leaders, that's their slogan. Why is there a .gov that's the slogan of European leaders?
Why is it the president-elect's website, Build Back Better? What does that even mean? First off, it's sort of a, just grammatically, it's kind of a disaster, but.
Is it like once it falls apart, we're going to make it stronger again? So like if an animal's suffering, you want to put it out of its misery? Is that what they're trying to do right now is put the system out of its misery so that it can come back stronger?
We
can
everything's restart. Being destroyed and they're going to build back better.
But better.
There you go.
Well, yeah. They're just talking about.
I needed the right emphasis on
that. Exactly. It feels good.
Redefine capitalism to make everything more equal and more fair for everyone.
Because,
you know, the big powerful globalists that are responsible for so many ills and wrongs in the world are now going to have a 180-degree flip in their soul and actually start doing good things for everyone, just like they promise in this very vague, open language that we hear on the IMF, the World Bank,
and
the World Economic Forum.
I do want to make sure we cite all this. We have The Hill. John Kerry reveals Biden's devotion to radical Great Reset movement. Now, to clarify, this is from a contributor, Justin Haskins, but he does go into talk about the Great Reset movement, COVID, and here we have the World Economic Forum's The Great Reset website saying There's an urgent need for global stakeholders to cooperate in simultaneously managing the direct consequences of the COVID-19 crisis to improve the state of the world. The World Economic Forum is starting the Great Reset Initiative.
Yep.
We had on Destiny. Are you familiar with Destiny? He's a leftist. Although the progressive, I guess the woke left really hates him because he said, I guess he said that Kyle Rittenhouse was defending himself. And so they went after him. But he's pretty lefty. He said, isn't a crisis like COVID the perfect time to do reforms to make the world a better place? Doesn't that make sense? So I think the issue is put a pin in that. Now I'll mention I had Alex Jones on the show and I asked him, what if they're right? That, you know, humanity is hurtling towards non-existence, extinction, because we're destroying this planet, stripping resources and just burning ourselves alive. Don't we need to do something? Is that possible? And Alex actually said, you're right. I think about that all the time. It may be. But, you know, it's a very serious challenge. And then ultimately what it comes down to, hearing this from, say, Destiny or hearing what Alex thought about it, it's a question of your right to impose what you think is right for the rest of the world. And here's where the real problem comes in. If you came to me and told me, Tim, the world is on fire and it's going to end soon, I'd be like, that's a problem. What can we do to solve it? If I trust you. What if you're not right? What if you're just another crazy person like all the rest of the crazy people who thinks they know what the world needs? You've got fascists who think they know what the world needs. I certainly don't trust them. You've got communists who think they know what the world needs. I don't trust them either. So if someone comes to me and says, we must impose authoritarian rule over all of the people of the world to make sure we survive, I don't have any good reason to trust what you're saying. I want the world to survive. I want to mitigate these problems. I personally think we got a problem with climate change. And you even mentioned we got a problem with resources. But who do I trust? Who do we empower to put the boot down over everybody else?
So a doctor once told me, I love this saying, people don't sue outcomes. They sue relationships. So here's my relationship with these elites at this point in time. They just lie about everything. So I'm actually fairly sympathetic to this line of thinking. If they said, listen, we're 7.8 billion people, normal trajectory, we're going to 9, maybe 10 billion. That's a fact. That's going to happen by 2050. Here's where we are in the resource story. Here's how much oil we think we have left. Here's how much fresh water we think we have left. There's a gap here. We have a problem on our hands. But let's pull through this together. So this would have been like going to the nation back in 1940 and saying, we have to defeat Nazis, right? And as long as you're honest about that, people will go, okay, you know, if people know what the vision is, they will crawl through mud, literally. You ever seen those people do those mudders, right? Like just crawling, like, because they have
tough
this
mudder.
Yeah, and it's team-based, and they want to do it. So people will do amazing. I have great faith in people, but I think what you're talking about is that the people who are pulling the strings up there right now, they don't have that same faith. In fact, they actually don't trust us. So that means we're in a relationship that's not based on trust, and so your question is a good one, which is, why should I do anything if I don't trust you?
Well, yeah. Here's an interesting conundrum.
All right, so there's a lot to unpack just from that first clip, because it starts out with Build Back Better. And my first thinking was, as I'm listening to the clip, hey, I should bring these books and put them on the desk here. And while the clip is playing, I'm going to look up Build Back Better in the index of Klaus Schwab's books, because this is something that the World Economic Forum and the other people that they're working with, Build Back Better is their slogan. It's their marketing. It's their business plan that has been adopted by Biden and Harris. So I thought, well, let's just bring up the books. We'll go in the index. We'll find which book has it in there, except there's no indices in these books. So they don't want you to find things like that. That's inconvenient. It's not like Klaus doesn't have the ability to put an index in the book. But the books, I'll show you real quick. They just, they have appendices, they have notes, but there's no index in any of these books, which I find as an author and a reader, that's the first part of a book I read is the index to see what's in it. Here's the other example. This is the June 2020, and it just ends with the appendices, one of which is, well, anyway, I don't have time to go into those. That was the point. Build Back Better comes from these guys, the globalists, the internationalists, however you want to see it. These are the Build Back Better plans of action that those working groups like Bilderberg and Davos and Trilateral Commission and Council on Foreign Relations have put together for your future. However, going on in that clip, Chris Martinson was also talking about resources. Scarcity of resources. And maybe that justifies this globalism that we see, right? If there's a resource problem, there's overpopulation, they say, and there's scarcity and all these things, they have to build back better, forcibly have this type of it's not constitutional republic for sure, and it's not really democracy when you have a supranational, multi-generational cabal of folks who decide that they are your betters, that they are your owners, that they have special rights that you don't have, and that they can reshape the world in their image. Sounds like people playing God to me, but I do want to add some nuance to that conversation, because I greatly respect the daily coverage of Tim Pool, the long time coverage of Luke Radowski, and then Chris Martinson has been a lifesaver since COVID. So what I wanted to point out was just I wanted to add nuance to the claim that this is all justified, this great reset, because we have scarcity of resources. So let me see what Buckminster Fuller has to say about this, because I did pull this book up and I do have an index in this book, and we are able to find. This is called Buckminster Fuller's Universe, an Appreciation. This is by Lloyd Stephen Sydan. And a quick note about this book before I get into it. When I interviewed Robert Kiyosaki a couple years ago, it was a rough interview starting out, and I had this book sitting on the desk because I knew he had an affinity for Buckminster Fuller. And then it was through talking about this book that I actually had what he called the best interview he ever had. But to get there, he said, "What do you like about that book?" Because Kiyosaki knows Lloyd Sydan. He doesn't like Lloyd Sydan. And I had dug myself into a hole just by mentioning it. So it was my passion for Fuller's work and understanding the world from how he saw it through reading his books that I found this kind of compilation of his life's work to be really rewarding. So let's go to page, I think it's 372, 373. Let's check it out for sure. 373. Let's zoom in for you. This is good for everybody. Let's listen, because you don't often get a contradictory view on this population scarcity of resources problem. And Buckminster Fuller did leave us with some of these ideas. This comes from chapter 16 in Buckminster Fuller's Universe by Lloyd Sydan. Thomas Malthus was an economist and a professor at the East India Company College, just outside of London, the one institution charged with educating all the civil servants managing the British Empire's global holdings. The East India Company College also became the sole repository for global information gathered by British citizens and civil servants around the world. His access to such a multitude of data made Malthus the first person to study a comprehensively complete inventory of the world's vital and economic statistics. Using that data in 1798, he wrote the classic work, An Essay on the Principle of Population, which he revised in 1803. Those elaborate dissertations documented the fact that the human population was increasing far more rapidly than the relatively scarce production of life-supporting goods and services. From that data, Malthus concluded that the scarcity of goods that people experienced would increase unless something was done to curb the rising population. So it's a good argument, 1798. Let me see if I can move my tablet so we can read this here. I lost my place when I did that. Sorry about that. rising population. Fuller found that over the years, Malthus's conclusions have become widely accepted and have been combined with the theory of evolution proposed by the famous British scientist Charles Darwin during the mid-19th century. Darwin's hypothesis was popularly reduced to survival of the fittest, and when coupled with Malthus's documentation of the increasing scarcity of resources and the expanding of population, it supported escalating competition for resources among rival sectors of the human population. The most evident such competition was among economic systems, principally socialism versus capitalism. He has a footnote for that. You can look it up. Malthus had not, however, considered the synergistic consequences of combining new knowledge with resources. This is the point I'm seeking people to talk about. Still, because of his unique access to information in the ensuing years, most educated people continued to utilize Malthus's pessimistic perspective and ideas as a foundation for future predictions. Also a footnote. Fuller recognized the flaw in that logic and argued that Malthus's basic premise was incorrect. He believed, and later documented, that the ever-increasing technology, which Malthus could not even imagine, much less utilized in his predictions, was creating an entirely new environment capable of supporting all of humanity. Like Malthus's ideas, Fuller's theory was also predicated on global resource information. However, Bucky's information was far more comprehensive and clearly indicated that humanity's constant addition of new knowledge to physical resources was producing a set of circumstances never before seen in recorded history. Such new knowledge would permit every individual and industry to do much more with the same resources and would consequently enable more people to be supported. Now, there's a lot more evidence that Fuller laid out for that point, but I just wanted to point out that there is evidence out there contradicting Malthus, contradicting Darwin, contradicting the Club of Rome, contradicting the Agenda 21, and all the other reasons that are being brought in to build back better for the Great Reset. Just wanted to lay it out there, put it out there, dig into it on your own. Now let's go. With that being said, I think we can go to the second clip. Oh, Free Ross. All right. So Ross Ulbricht, if you don't know who Free Ross is, Free Ross is Lynn Ulbricht. It's Ross Ulbricht's mother. She has a Twitter handle, Free Ross. She has a YouTube page, Free Ross. If you go to freeross.org, you can see the, it's like a documentary film based on the case evidence. It's called Railroaded, The Targeting and Caging of Ross Ulbricht. Now, Ross was a libertarian, 20-something, creative entrepreneur, web designer who created a website called Silk Road. He was then later arrested, and if you follow the evidence, framed up, and there was political prisoner status that comes into his case when you find out his sentencing had very little to do with the actions he took and more to do with the libertarian philosophy of freedom that he held insofar as the judge's quotes that said the reason for his double life sentence plus 40 years plus $200 million fine when no one else associated with the trial or the case had gotten anything like that. And Ross is a nonviolent first-time offender and Eagle Scout. So to look at the case, it's an egregious miscarriage of justice. But why should you care? Well, you should care because there are precedents set in Ross's case that are deleterious to each and every person's rights in this country. And those types of precedents being set, they are deleterious to your freedom. They are caustic to our constitutional republic. And that's why these types of things need to be looked at, studied, understood, supported, shared, documented. Like there's a petition with 350,000 plus signatures. And right now what they're trying to do is to get President Trump to, along with the rest of the people he's pardoning, to just commute Ross's sentence. He's already served 7 years in prison for actions that he's blamed for in the public that he wasn't even charged for. So when you ask most people, why is he in prison or why don't you want him free? They come up with something that wasn't even presented in trial. That's a work of black propaganda out there. Psychological warfare that has been conducted to skew the case, to obscure and censor the truth. And we're going to see a clip here. There's been many clips in the past couple of weeks of people supporting Ross Ulbricht. There's been many clips on Fox News and various other news channels. Newsmax, I think, had one. The one we're going to see right now is a short summary that published this week. And please consider the case of Ross Ulbricht. And if you support his case, please share the news.
My son, Ross Ulbricht, is serving two life sentences plus 40 years without parole. He is a first-time offender, and all his convictions are nonviolent. He was never prosecuted for killing or injuring anyone. No victim was named at trial. Ross is condemned to die in prison for the mistake of creating a website called Silk Road, a mistake he deeply regrets. An idealistic libertarian in his 20s, he wanted to provide a free market experience where consenting people could buy and sell what they chose as long as no third party was harmed. Legal items were sold, but so were drugs, mostly small amounts of marijuana. Even though Ross didn't have contact with any items sold on the site, he was held responsible for all of it and received a walking death sentence. Ross has a life history of compassion and generosity. While in prison, he has been a light in a dark place and has dedicated himself to helping others. He has mentored and set an example by tutoring, teaching classes, helping prisoners earn high school diplomas, and more. 130 of his fellow prisoners signed a letter asking President Trump to free Ross. Over 250 organizations and eminent individuals have also voiced their support. They believe Ross deserves a second chance, and so do over 350,000 people who have signed Ross's Change.org clemency petition. The world doesn't need to be protected from my son. He's a peaceful man who is eager to give back and contribute to society. We hope and pray that the president will commute Ross's cruel and unjust sentence and release him to do the good that he's capable of. Please visit freeross.org and sign the petition. Please ask the president to free Ross.
Free Ross, free Assange, Snowden's, he's in Russia, he's fine. All right, so going forward, what can you do to free Ross? You can sign a petition, you can share the various videos, you can sign up to the email list at freeross.org. You could share the Railroaded movie. The documentation for that, it's a couple hours. It was made in several parts. It goes through the case. If you ever wanted to see the targeting and caging and framing of somebody that's not fiction, that's going on in our country, it's horrific. I didn't know that we had political prisoners in this country until I went to college and I learned about people like Mumia Abu-Jamal. Ross Ulbricht is also a political prisoner in this country. He's expected to serve a double life sentence without parole for nonviolent crimes. That'd be like holding Craig Newmark from Craigslist accountable for things that people on Craigslist sold. Providing the infrastructure is not the same thing as doing those activities. And those criminal activities that people did do on the Silk Road, the fines and the time in jail and prison is minuscule, a couple years. So you got to ask the question, why? And I'll give you part of the answer. Look at the price of Bitcoin right now. Bitcoin would not be $35,000 per Bitcoin right now if it weren't for someone figuring out how to put Bitcoin into play in the economy. And that's what Silk Road did in the first place. So there was a lot to be learned from the Silk Road case. There were federal agents who were caught stealing Bitcoin, who were supposed to be investigating the case. They were caught stealing Bitcoin and went to prison. That's not enough reasonable doubt to let Ross out of prison to commute his sentence. I don't know what if you went through the rest of the evidence, you'd find about 100 more horrific and egregious activities like that going on within our justice system that prosecuted him. By the way, all the people that prosecuted Ross were the sworn enemies of Donald Trump. There's Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, Eric Holder, and some other people that were they're still looking and seeking for power today. So if there's something useful that President Trump can do before he leaves office is putting his little squiggle on a piece of paper that sets Ross home free for 2021 and forever with his family and friends. All right. So with that being said, we're going to roll our next clip. This comes from America Uncensored. You might know him as Chris Chappell. He also does China Uncensored. And though this video is, it had a funny thumbnail, because he was talking about Nostradamus and zombies. And this was a real Newsweek article that got floated this week that has no basis in factual reality, as Chris adeptly pointed out. But what I wanted to point out about this video was a clip about 5 minutes into that, and Control Room's going to help me find that exact cue point in the video. But I wanted you to hear some of the fine work that they're doing in New York City under the name of America Uncensored. Doing it live.
I just had the thumbnail up on the screen there for a sec, just to show people what you're talking about, and then we'll play this clip here. Oh, I'm gonna get hit with a commercial.
Silly Newsweek, putting out those stories that everyone copied.
Here we go.
It was pretty good research, because he's like, we didn't want to look into it.
Welcome back.
But we're researchers, so we did.
The one prediction that will certainly come true in 20.
Oh, we got hit again. There's like a ad coming up right at that point in the video, I guess.
Oh man, yeah, there you go. I love it when a plan comes together like this.
Do it live. Okay.
2021 is
that at least Chris gets paid.
We'll continue to copy each other's stories without bothering to check if they're actually true. That's one reason why the public is inundated with so much misinformation. And it's why so many people have stopped trusting so-called authoritative media. Remember this blockbuster Politico story from last year about how Trump owes millions of dollars to a Chinese state-owned bank? It was repeated by lots of other media, all citing the Politico article. And then it turned out to be not true, because the Bank of China sold off the loan back in 2012, long before Trump ran for office. So then Politico quietly changed their headline without issuing a correction. And then, after more backlash, they issued an editor's note and a correction several days later. Of course, most people don't know that, and still think Trump owes millions to a Chinese bank. This kind of thing has happened repeatedly in the last few years, especially when it involves Trump. It was especially bad during the Russian collusion investigation, like when ABC News claimed that Michael Flynn would testify that Trump told him to contact the Russians about ISIS during the campaign. Turns out that was not true. Flynn said that Trump told him to contact Russia during the transition, not the campaign, which completely changes the story. ABC News had to issue a correction, as did other media that had jumped on the story after ABC reported it. ABC ended up firing that reporter. There was also the time BuzzFeed claimed that the Mueller investigation had found that Trump told Michael Cohen to lie to Congress. Other media jumped on the story, citing BuzzFeed. Mueller's office actually denied the BuzzFeed report at the time, but BuzzFeed did not issue a correction until 3 months later, when the Mueller report was publicly released. And there was the embarrassing time that CNN, MSNBC, and CBS all messed up the same story. They all said that they had sources who confirmed there was an email proving that WikiLeaks had given Donald Trump and Trump Jr. hacked DNC emails that hadn't been publicly released on WikiLeaks. This would prove that Trump was colluding with Russia via WikiLeaks. I would show you the original video, but CNN has scrubbed it from the internet, because it turns out that those emails were sent after WikiLeaks made the hacked documents public. And the email wasn't even sent by anyone at WikiLeaks. It was just some guy who saw that WikiLeaks had publicly released these documents and thought the Trumps would be interested. There's lots more of these examples of the media getting things really wrong, like the whole Covington Catholic story. But you get the point. These are stories that are so bad, these media outlets had to walk them back. So at least some people will hear that these stories were actually wrong. There are also stories that are basically wrong or extremely misleading, but not so technically inaccurate that the media have to issue corrections. And then, no one realizes they were misled. Like this story from 2019, claiming that Trump said he might veto the Hong Kong Human Rights and Democracy Act. You'll notice in the first sentence that the Washington Post changed "Trump says he might veto" from the headline to "suggested he might veto." But then, when you read the rest of the story, there's no actual quote where Trump suggests he would veto the legislation. At most, he talks about how he stands with Hong Kong and freedom, but he also wants a trade deal with his good buddy Xi Jinping. The Washington Post based their story on a Fox and Friends interview with Trump. And so, we went back and listened to the original interview. And in the interview, Trump does not suggest he would veto the bill. But the misleading Washington Post story was reprinted in several different media, all with a similar headline, like the Boston Globe and the Australian Financial Review. Reuters also published a story that made it seem like Trump might veto the bill because he was vague about it. Our China Uncensored social media was getting panicked messages from Hong Kongers asking us if it was true that Trump was going to veto the bill. A few days later, he signed it into law. No veto. And his administration has since used it to aggressively sanction a bunch of Hong Kong officials. That's despite Trump getting his trade deal. I know these examples have been Trump-centric, but this problem is not limited to how the media covers Trump. Believe me, I've seen it for years with how the media covers China, too. It's just that a lot of the worst examples of this involve Trump, because he drives the media absolutely crazy. And he knows it. Okay, here's an example that's not about Trump, the Hunter Biden story. In October, NPR said it wasn't worth covering. Politico said it was Russian disinformation. And most of the mainstream media agreed, until after the election, when it came out that Hunter Biden was under federal investigation for his business deals involving China. And he had been since 2018. So sad to see CNN peddling Russian disinformation. Actually, since this did involve the presidential election, I guess it is related to Trump after all. But the Covington Catholic thing wasn't. Oh, wait, they were wearing MAGA hats. Oh my gosh, what if every story is actually related to Trump? It's like the media version of 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon. Let's see. How is the Nostradamus story related to Trump? Well, in the fake Nostradamus 2021 prediction, the guy who creates the virus that turns people into zombies is a Russian scientist. Since he's Russian, he's probably colluding with Trump, which means that Trump is responsible for the zombie apocalypse. I can see the headlines now, and the headlines that repeat the other headlines. I can't wait to watch the History Channel documentary, Nostradamus, the Ancient Alien Who Predicted Trump Will End the World. And remember...
America Uncovered and China Uncensored, for when you're at the intersection of apocalyptic fiction and current events. That seems to be what they cover there. Chris also has, Chris Chappell, who hosts the show, he has a wonderful sense of humor. So as he's teaching you about, for instance, his other show, China Uncensored, I started watching that in early January when I was picking up on this thing going on over in Wuhan. You guys might have heard of it. Anyway, I started watching China Uncensored. I think that's what it's called. Now that I know it's America Uncovered on his other show, right? That was the thing I messed up right before the... So I messed up the name of the show, the new show. China Uncensored does an impeccable job of reporting on what's going on with the Chinese Communist Party, what's going on in Hong Kong, the struggle for liberty and freedom, the struggle for censorship over there. It's an excellent program, and I'm just a new fan of America Uncovered because now he's taking that the rapier wit and the research intellect and pointing them toward a domestic audience here on the stateside. All right, so next up on the roster tonight, we've got another new one that I shoved into the outline right before we came downstairs. So this is Jason Burmes. He's going to be talking about this new story where a doctor took the COVID vaccine and he tested positive for COVID. So let me ask you a question before you guys watch this clip. What is the main reason that people are taking the vaccine? Is it to prevent them from getting infected? Is it to prevent them from spreading the infection? What if it does none of the above and they still want you to take that risk? Is it an efficacious risk? Have you weighed the risk? Anyway, let's learn a little bit from this doctor that Jason was able to offer us earlier today.
Tested positive. You know, It's just, it's insane. So doctor warns COVID vaccine is not a cure after contracting virus post-inoculation. Okay, so here we go.
Courtesy of a physician who was recently vaccinated.
Yeah, despite getting the first of two shots, that doctor still contracted the virus. Action News' Gray Hall live now at the Satellite Center with what that doctor wants all of us to know, Gray.
Hey, Brian and Shari, as a frontline worker, this doctor, of course, one of the first ones to receive the vaccine. Outside of some side effects, he said he was okay. That is until he contracted COVID-19. His message is that the vaccine is not a cure.
So stop there. Outside of some side effects, not one side effect, not a little pain in the arm, which they're trying to sell you on. That's Gates and Fauci saying that, right? You know, when we talked about the Moderna and 80%, right? He was like, oh, most of that's just a pain in the arm, and then Fauci's patting his arm after. It's just a little pain in the arm. Side effects after side effects. But we'll continue.
About 9-10 days after getting the first dose of vaccine, I started to feel sick again. You know, fever, chills, headache, sore throat, cough, some shortness of breath.
Dr. Taroghi says despite getting the first of a two-dose vaccine, he was now a COVID-19 patient.
So, again, this is a guy that has the side effects. He's a doctor. He's been around these patients a ton, okay? He gets it. He has side effects. And then 9-10 days later, he starts feeling sick again. He just told you all the symptoms, and now he's tested positive.
I've been treating COVID patients for about a year, and I didn't get sick. And now, right after getting the vaccine, it's a little, you know, ironic and unusual.
It's a little ironic and unusual. And he's smiling about this. No, it's horrifying because they're trying to mandate this. Okay? Fauci has now said in a Newsweek article, we're going to show you that in a moment, that he feels that hospitals hospitals and schools will mandate this. And he talks about not a federal mandate, but all these institutional mandates. Listen, this is I mean, look at this guy, and he's smiling about it. I'm going to bring it back because this is like Orwell on steroids, the way they portray this. Bring it right back to him.
Getting the first dose of vaccine, I started to feel sick again. You know, fever, chills, headache, sore throat, cough, some shortness of breath.
Dr. Taroghi says despite getting the first of a two-dose vaccine, he was now a COVID-19 patient.
I've been treating COVID patients for about a year, and I didn't get sick. And now, right after getting the vaccine, it's a little, you know, ironic and unusual. So I had myself